And thanks for joining us now on KVCR for KVC Arts. Arts and entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. David Fleming welcoming Marina Jurica Preston. Marina, thank you so much for joining me for this.
Well, thanks for having me, David.
Now, many people may easily recognize your name, and they may be wondering if I am indeed having a climatologist slash meteorologist on a show with an arts and entertainment focus. Let's talk about that. I mean, where people quite probably do indeed know you from in this region.
Yes, it is interesting. I say it's what happens when my mother, who's an opera singer, and my father, who's an engineer, procreate. You get a singing scientist.
Yes.
So that's the joke I always say. But that's right. I double majored at UCLA in opera performance. I got a full scholarship in music and atmospheric science. So I know that's a very strange combo, but I did the same combo for my master's, and I'm currently getting my PhD in climate science. So it is a unique joint love, passion, interest, but I have loved them both equally, and I've been blessed to be able to spend my life doing both.
And now people would know you, though, from CBS LA, most notably, I mean, if they watch commercial TV.
Yes, that's right. I'm a meteorologist and chief climatologist for the network, and I've absolutely loved being able to make people more aware of climate change and what it means, especially for our area that is prone to feeling the effects of climate change the most. And so I've enjoyed my 2.5 years that I've been at CBS LA, and really as a meteorologist around the entire country, and I spent about 6 years at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in Pasadena.
The thrust of this conversation is really going to be about the Secret Garden that's opening this Saturday, March 28th at Inland Valley Repertory Theater. But before going there, I kind of have to know something. Just because of what I do, that is, away from KVC Arts, I'm the local host for All Things Considered, giving the forecast, you know, easily 17 or 18 times every single day. And when my wife wants to ask, you know, if she needs a jacket or whatever, she'll often instead ask what the forecast is, which leads me to say, partly cloudy with lows in the lower 50s, once again warmer through the week, the highs in the lower 100s by week's end, it's 4:30. Does this happen in your household?
Oh, constantly. And friends who will, let's say, go to Italy for a week. Marina, what's the forecast in Italy for the week? Or, you know, my husband actually woke up this morning and said, oh, Marina, when is it going to get out of the 90s? I said, never, never, never.
Nice, nice.
But yes, it does happen often, but I'm always happy to acquiesce and help.
Oh, that's really cool. When were you grabbed by theater? You did have a professional opera singer in the household, but was it her or was it some spectacle you witnessed as a kid? What was it for you?
I think it was having my mom, you know, just being on tour with her when I was 2, 3, 4 years old. Mm. I'd be on tour and I'd be backstage with Luciano Pavarotti and Domingo, and they'd be like playing games with me while I was backstage and she was singing in Milan or Paris. And so it was quite a way to wake up and, you know, enjoy your childhood in the theater. And so I absolutely loved it, and I had always loved it. But my dad is very pragmatic, and he just really wanted me to double major always and think about it in both ways, because he's like, you're really smart and science and math, Marina. So, you know, just evolve in both things that you love and then see where the world takes you. And I just saw my mom's career. It was very up and down. And so, you know, I guess the more sensible person in me wanted just much more of a consistent paycheck, where I've always been able to do theater on the side at the same time.
You just put it so much better than, I had to study something which I could get a so-called real job. I mean, as a theater person,
right,
I mean, that's, you know, it's a common type of thing. So, oh,
exactly.
So this is one of those, oh, Mom, I learned it from you, except we're talking about the arts. Okay. Oh, something you mentioned about Pavarotti and whatnot, hanging out backstage playing games with you. Did you ever witness he suddenly goes from chest voice to head voice saying, it's your turn, or whatever it is?
Yes. I mean, it's a very unique childhood, and I can't really explain it, but, you know, my grandparents raised me in Vancouver, Canada during the school year, and then whenever I wasn't in school, I was wherever my mom was. And so, you know, these characters who so many people have come to know and love, you know, were kind of like my second uncles, you know, and they helped in the process of raising me as well. But as I have always known, and in every place my husband and I, because my husband and I also met on stage, so in every place that I've been at, I always say theater people are the best people. They are the most giving, kind, and just really sincere, lovely people. And so if I had to pick friends from anywhere in the world, I would always want it to be theater people, just because they're so welcoming, a welcoming of everybody and everything, which I don't think you really find in circles and other careers.
Let's talk about The Secret Garden now. A bit of a synopsis, if you will, for those who don't know the book or the movie, or now and then, well, going from the play to the musical.
Yes, well, it is a musical based on, of course, Burnett's 1911 novel, The Secret Garden, and it's so beautiful. I mean, it's orphaned Mary Lennox. She's sent to live in this horrible, gloomy manor where she finds a locked garden, and with the help of all these gorgeous spirits, I, which am one of them, and new friends, bringing it back to life and healing her uncle and his son, who is very ill. And so I think it's really a beautiful story of forgiveness and renewal and grief and really the power of nature, which is always what's drawn me to the story. I mean, of course, being a scientist, I'm very drawn to the earth and what it can do to renew your spirit and renew life. And so I really feel like it is such a beautiful story. And then when I first saw the musical, I fell in love with the score. I mean, it is some of the most lush, beautiful music I have ever heard in my entire life. And there's not a lot of musicals that would bring me out of the woodwork just because I'm so very, very busy. I mean, I have my shows at 54 Below in New York. I do a lot of orchestra work. So I'll go out and, you know, have a rehearsal or two and then put on the show. But it's hard for me to take a couple months out of my life and rehearse. You know, you've always got those two or three shows that you would just drop everything. And The Secret Garden has always been that for me, just because it's just so beautiful and it's such a gorgeous story. And Lily has been, of course, a dream role of mine for so long. And I love how she's able to really draw the entire story together in almost like a spiritual way. It's so beautiful. It's such an incredible, incredible book and lyrics by Marcia Norman and the music by Lucy Simon. And I just think it has that very feminine feeling to it as well, having both female writers who wrote the book and the lyrics and music. So, I mean, it's just gorgeous. It's absolutely beautiful. And it's hardly ever done. And that's what's sad, is that it's hardly ever done because it's extremely difficult. It requires a cast of very well-trained singers. You've got kids in the cast as well that have to be really, really good. I mean, Mary Lennox holds up the whole show, and she's only 10, so it's sometimes difficult, especially for smaller theater companies, to pull it off.
Wow. This version, then, is it keeping true to the original presentation of early 20th century, the girl's childhood in India before going off to her uncle's estate, etc.?
Yes, 100%. And Chrissy Harding, our director, she has really, you know, drawn, of course, from the original Broadway production back in 1991, but then adding her own taste to it. She's predominantly a choreographer, so it's a very beautifully running show. I mean, we're always moving, going through her parents dying of the cholera in India and then pushing towards her new life in England and in Yorkshire, and basically her coming again into a new life, into a place where she wants to be involved and have a family and be loved again, to two people who are searching for the same thing but don't really know it, in Archie and in Colin Craven. It's just a really beautiful story of redemption. I mean, it really is, and that even through death, you can find happiness and family at the end.
Nice. So in the world of theater, you know, we always have somebody changing or adapting some known piece. You know, often Shakespeare, like Henry V being in World War II, or Hamlet in the Old West, or you know, whatever. So I'm sure this show could or could have been set in another time, in another place. But having it set in the early 20th century, I mean, first of all, this takes place about when it was written, but is there something about this which adds to it, the timeline and this very specific setting, or maybe other aspects of the play which made it most appropriate for the way it was written?
I think so, because it's a timeline of innocence, right?
Ah,
it's a time that we all yearn for before technology, before everything started shaping our lives in a completely different way. And I know, having a middle schooler and a young son, I see, you know, firsthand how things are changing. And I think this brings us back, especially right now in such a dark time, I think it brings us back to such a beautiful part where we could still be innocent. And so much of that is lost in this day and age.
Nice. Yeah, I suppose, too, if we made it too modern, the kid wouldn't be discovering the garden. They'd be having a cell phone strapped to their hip. And, well, first of all, they'd be playing Candy Crush, not even wandering
exactly
the ground.
Right.
Oh, boy.
Where's the Roblox?
Yeah. You spoke of Lily really nicely, and I read Lily described as, to quote, a passionate woman who followed her own instincts. She reaches from beyond the grave to ensure the happiness of those she cares for. You spoke wonderfully of the play itself and why you wanted to do this play at some point, but just what is it about Lily which made this a bucket list role for you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the score, singing this music,
gotcha,
is
okay,
incredible, and Lily's music is just beautiful. I mean, it's really quite lovely in my lyric soprano voice, and it's a very natural role for me to play. but I love now being a mother and actually taking this role on after I had John. It brings a whole new perspective because I couldn't imagine not being alive while my son is alive, and that's what I have to imagine is Lily. So she has to protect and love and nurture her son and her late husband from beyond. So she has to find a way to reach these people and help them move on and love them and know that they are loved and not abandoned from a different realm, which to me is just so heartbreaking, but so beautiful at the same time. And so I just love that idea of being able to help the people that you love the most in the beyond so that they can move on without you, but always hold the memory of you close by and know that you didn't leave them because you wanted to, but that you had to, and you're doing the best that you can to help them move forward as a result.
Beautiful. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Marina Jurica Preston, known to many as meteorologist with CBS LA, but for the purposes of this conversation, as an actress playing the part of Lily in The Secret Garden, opening March 28th at Inland Valley Repertory Theater, ivrt.org for this show and more in the season. Marina and her son John are in the play as mother and son, and there's one song in particular that's rather moving every time. Marina, talk for us, please, about the song that you sing with him, Come to My Garden. What part of the play that's in and what the song is saying? What's going on there, this dialogue?
Oh, and I haven't been able to make it through yet without crying.
So. Oh, no. Oh, gosh. Good luck here.
We're going to try really hard. Right, I know. And and that's another reason why I definitely wanted to do the show. I check for auditions for my son often because he is also a singing scientist. But I check for it often. And so when this audition notice came up, I just said, oh, my goodness. Like, he's right there at the cusp of almost not being able to play this role anymore. But who gets to play mother and son on stage?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a very rare opportunity. And so, of course, I jumped right into it. But yes, that's our one song we get to sing together. And it is so beautiful because he's sleeping through the first part of it. And he gets a lot of nightmares because he's been laying in bed for the bulk of his life. And, you know, he doesn't know what the outside world is like. And he wants to get well and he doesn't want to be sickly anymore. It's a very interesting dynamic because he has this picture of me that he can unveil and close whenever he wants to see me. But at this point in the play, I'm singing to him and he actually wakes up and he sees me. I mean, he really sees me as the ghost. And I'm telling him, come to my garden because it's going to heal you. It is going to give you so many blessings. And then it's going to heal your father and it's going to heal that relationship. And so, you know, I get to hold him, but I can't touch him. Oh. So Chrissy's just had this amazing way of directing us so that I'm right behind him and I'm almost touching him. But I am just not there yet. And at the very end, he leans back into me. And just before he touches me, it goes to black.
Oh. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so it's such a beautiful moment, and it's for us especially to be able to sing this just incredibly beautiful song. And so he's basically telling me, you know, I want to find my way there, and I'm telling him, please come there. And then, you know, shortly after that, he comes to the garden.
Oh, wow. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, this should then point out that while there are ghosts, this is not so much of a ghosties and goblins and things that go bump in the night kind of thing.
No.
Lily as an apparition, is she ghost-like as far as presentation, or is she perhaps presented as somebody would remember her as?
I'm very ghost-like, I would say. You know, I have things that flow off of my costume, so I do have more of that way about me. But what I do know is that my sister Rose and I come back as memories. And so then we don't come back as ghosts. We come back as the memory. And then there's this beautiful part, A Girl in the Valley, which is all about the courtship that I had with Archie. So in that way, it's more of a memory. It's not me as the ghost. So I think I bounce back and forth from being a ghost that's appearing to my family, trying to help them move forward, but then I'm also appearing as a memory with my sister or with my late husband or other people that are in the show. It's a very interesting dynamic because you always have to remember what you're trying to portray. And, you know, even though you want to be there in that moment with them, you're also trying to make these people who are alive at the moment move forward. So you don't want to keep bringing them back into the past. And that's a very critical moment in a duet I do with Archie Craven, which is How Could I Ever Know, which is such an incredibly beautiful duet. But it's basically, you know, how would I ever know that I would have to leave you? And he wants to come to the next world with me. But I'm telling him, no, you have to take care of the child of our love. And so it's a fine balance between, yes, I want to bring these people with me, but I don't want to bring them with me to the afterlife. I want them to stay in the living world and have the best life that they can have in that world.
Wow. So much of what you're saying here, I keep on coming out. Wow. Oh, my God. That's deep. That's really...
It's a beautiful show. I mean, you can see. I mean, like, I'm crazy busy. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and rehearsing till 10 o'clock at night, but I'm okay because it's a show I've always wanted to do.
Nice. Yeah, it's got to be great as an actor, as you mentioned, not just Lily the ghost, but also Lily the memory. And so that would have to be a couple of different presentations of the same character. Mm-hmm. Vocally, then, I mean, not so much of a full-on, they're coming to get you, Barbara, kind of thing, but is there something changed with your voice as you're doing this, or is it really all in appearance, lighting, perhaps, less of the flowy things when it's a memory as opposed to the apparition, the spirit talking about the garden?
100%. And it's also like in my voice. If I'm talking to my sister, I'm upset with her because she's telling me not to marry Archie because he's a hunchback and not something that she would want me to marry. And she doesn't want my children to be hunchbacks and have issues. And so, you know, I'm much more direct and poignant when I'm speaking to Rose. And it's just my matter of inflection in my voice. But when I sing, it's so ghostly. Lily has all of these oohs and ahs, and they're just up in the stratosphere when it comes to the vocal spectrum. So, you know, she's hitting all these high C's, high D's, and they're so light and high and airy. So it's just very ghost-like when she sings. And then when she's singing a song like A Girl in the Valley with Archie, and they're remembering fondly their courtship, she's more coquettish and she's more flirty. And so I get to be a lot of different things, which is actually quite nice.
That would be fun for an actor. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Theater instructors from years gone by would be turning in their graves. But I know many lines are indeed just lines. But there are, of course, some which resonate deeply for us as actors. Some being, as a matter of fact, the string of words which enables you to bring more authenticity to the character. You know, it's relatable or something you can draw from within for the manifestation of this character. Tell me about something from Lily like this. I mean, there's the mother-son relationship. Something else or maybe deep within Lily which just makes the character for you.
Yeah. Oh, that's a tough question because there's so much in this that is so deep that you really need to dig hard to find inside of you. But Lily sings most of this libretto.
Okay.
She has like 4 lines.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
So I basically sing through most of this music, whereas my son, he's got a whole lot of lines and like 2 songs. I've got like 12 songs and 4 lines. So it is a very much me singing through it. And I think finding the difference in your vocal quality. So when I'm with John, it's so tender when I'm with my son. And then when I'm with Archie singing, How Could I Ever Know? You know, I mean, I tell him, how could I know I would have to leave you? How could I know I would hurt you so? You were the one I was born to love. Oh, how could I ever know? So to me, then it's almost desperation. You know, like, how was I supposed to know that I would hurt you so much? And that desperation you have to feel in my voice. Because I can't say it, I'm singing it. So you have to see it and you have to feel it. So I think because Lily sings most of this show, I have to find those inflections in what I am singing and in my vocal quality, if that makes sense.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Marina Jurica Preston, performing in Inland Valley Repertory Theater's production of The Secret Garden as Lily. Again, in the play, she plays the mother of a child who's actually played by her actual son, which led to a question about him and his character as I read through the character descriptions. I understand John's character, Colin. He's described as, well, bedridden for most of his life, but also stubborn and prone to throwing fits when he's not getting what he wants. Okay, I don't know if this is too personal or out of place to ask, but was he a fit-throwing kind of child? Could he do the Stanislavskian method acting approach here?
No, not at all. I mean, everyone has their moments. I feel like he's a little more like that as a teenager right now.
Oh.
But it's more hormonal than childlike. But no, he's always been just a wonderfully brilliant and smart child. And it really wasn't until much later in his life, we never forced theater on him because we just wanted that to be a natural occurrence, like it was for me and like it was for my husband. My husband and I met on stage doing the show Crazy for You. Hmm. He was Lank and I was Polly.
Oh,
and we fell in love, so a very traditional showmance. And he knew all of that, but it was Matilda was his first musical. And I think it was in fifth grade. And he came up to us and he just said, Mom, I want to audition for the show. And I'm like, oh, okay. I was like, do you need any help with your audition? And he goes, no. I was like, oh, okay, all right. And so then he got like his first big part as one of Matilda's friends in Matilda, the junior musical, and he absolutely fell in love with it. And every year he has been just growing. And of course he plays the violin as well. He's concertmaster of the school orchestra.
Gosh.
And he's loved it. He did A Christmas Carol with The Noise Within, and he's just been getting the bug and getting it more and more and more. He just really loves it. And when I've asked him before, I say, you know, why do you like to do it? And he goes, I just really like putting my shoes in somebody else's life.
Oh,
he's like, wow. I like being able to just be able to be somebody else for like a couple months. And it's really cool to be able to see what somebody else is going through emotionally, physically, in a different character. And so that's what he said that he loves about it. And with Colin, I mean, it was a bit of a stretch. I mean, he had to go back to trying to be a little more childlike when he's in a stage where he's kind of in between child and teenage years right now. And, you know, trying to grow up, but then still having childlike tendencies. And so he had to really feed back into that. But him and Amy have great chemistry. I love Amy Sorensen, who's playing Mary Lennox. She is a spitfire, and anyone who comes to see this show is going to agree. She's just absolutely lovely. The entire cast is incredible, but you know, Mary Lennox has to hold the whole show on her 10-year-old shoulder, which is a big ask. And I think that her and John have just found such a beautiful rhythm in the last couple of weeks of rehearsal. And you know, I mean, it's a story about these two kids have lost everything. They've absolutely lost almost everything, and they find strength together in this beautiful place that they make their own, the Secret Garden. And I think, you know, yes, he can throw tantrums in the beginning, but I love the evolution of both characters because Mary, trust me, she can throw tantrums as well. So I think that shows their character arc so beautifully, where they go from being spoiled and getting everything that they want because they are, and throwing tantrums, but then this beautiful arc to the end where they realize what's most important in life, family, love, accepting everybody, and not feeling entitled, which I think both of them grow out of pretty quickly.
I was all set to ask you for a closing quote, but I think you just did it. I mean, the idea behind this story really can be summed up. You mentioned redemption earlier. I saw it and read it as, in the worst possible situations, one can still find beauty and hope. And this is a wonderful message. Of course, yeah, now. But really, any time. I mean, throw a dart at a timeline, you can hit something where we need something positive. We should be reminded of such things. But this isn't just some message-driven play. So going beyond the plot line, what do patrons walk away from this with? What are they going to be feeling or remembering and wanting to do tomorrow, perhaps even?
I think realizing the power of nature. You know, I've been performing on stage. I had my first role as Jan Cosette in the original Canadian Tour of Les Mis. So let's say for the better part of the last 35 years, I've been on some sort of a stage. And every time I finish a show, you know, I always feel a sense of loss, because it's been a few months with all of these wonderful people, but also a sense of joy as to what we've accomplished. And I've done so many shows across the entire United States, across even the world in some locations. And so there's something extremely special about this show at this time. It's like when I just watched Ragtime in New York. It was like something that just hit me at the right time, because I've seen Ragtime before, but it didn't hit me like that. Right now, in a time when we need stories of hope, we need stories that there is light at the end of all of this darkness, because if we don't go through darkness, we don't see or appreciate the light as much. And so I think that this Secret Garden is hitting at not only the most perfect time, but it's hitting in a very poignant time in my life when climate science and science in general is being denied. It is a time in my life where I'm spending these incredible last few years before my son goes to college with him and experiencing this memory that you cannot have at any other time. It's happening right now. I get to spend it with my son. I get to spend it with this beautiful company at IVRT who all want to bring this incredible story of redemption, love, hope, and endurance. And I think that is probably the message I want everyone to receive, because we are going through a lot of dark right now, but out of dark always comes light if we want the light to be there. And so I feel we make our own light. And if they don't feel that light when they leave the show, I'd be shocked, because all of us can barely make it through the show without crying at one point. And this cast is just so brilliant and so full of life and love. I think everyone will leave the theater realizing that it's not quite as heavy today, that we did a lot of the heavy lifting for the souls in those seats for the day, and they could be living a little bit lighter for the rest of their evening. And I think if you can do that in this day and age, any way you can do that, then I think you need to grab it and come see The Secret Garden.
Beautiful. Oh my gosh, there it is again.
It's so beautiful, and this cast is just an incredible, lovely group of people. And, you know, it's traditionally the minimal amount of people that can be in the cast is 22. Chrissy was telling this us the other day, and there's only 16 of us.
Oh, wow.
So our dreamers are heavy lifting in a big way, because they're having to basically do the double job of multiple characters, multiple moving set pieces. So, I mean, a big shout out to the dreamers, because they are just doing the job of double what they're supposed to be doing. And it's just really incredible to watch their enthusiasm and their willingness to just work so hard like that.
Once again, beautiful. Marina, thank you so much for your time on this. I mean, Break a Leg, of course, but we're in the world of opera, but no, that's dance.
Brava.
There it is. So again, just really thank you for your time, and I'm glad to be able to get the word out on this.
All right, wonderful. Thank you so much. Have a beautiful day.
You too, Marina. That was Marina Jurica Preston playing Lily in the upcoming production of The Secret Garden at Inland Valley Repertory Theater in La Verne, opening March 28th. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Marina, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Adam Rainey Ruiz, Jessica Greenwell, and Sharina Wadd. Many past shows can be found through Spotify, iTunes, NPR One, or many other podcast sites, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts composed and performed by Sean Longstreet, so thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. You can support this station with a contribution any time of the year at kvcrnews.org/support. There, it takes approaching 3 minutes of your time going through a very easy process, and that holds true for either a one-time gift or setting up a sustaining membership, just about 3 minutes of your time. Again, kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.